Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A science story, huh?
Is NYU scientist the...
I felt right.
I was so
and I just thought, well...
I figured it out.
It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hi everyone, I'm Ben Lilly, and welcome to the Story Collider, where we bring you true personal stories about science. This week's story is from Henry Duffy. It was recorded in March 2016 at the Hackney Round Chapel in London, in collaboration with the British Science Association as part of British Science Week.
So, a couple of years ago, I was studying conservation, and it came to the time where we had to pick projects to do. And we could look at advertised projects and pick one of interest. And I was looking at this list of projects, and one of them said, underwater cameras. And I stopped. Underwater cameras, great, sign me up, sold, whatever else. It sounds really interesting. Didn't look at where it was, initially. After my initial excitement died down, I thought, should probably see where this is going to be. And it said, the Pitcairn Islands. Anybody heard of the Pitcairn Islands? That's more than people usually say, actually, if I ask anybody. I'd never heard of them. I had absolutely no idea. I thought, oh, maybe it's near Australia. Great, I'll get to go to somewhere near Australia. It's not near Australia. It's over 1,000 miles away from Australia, so I couldn't have been more wrong. And after lots of looking on Real Maps and Google Maps, I found the suggestion of a speck in the South Pacific Ocean, which was the Pitcairn Islands and Pitcairn Island itself. To give you an idea of how remote it is, it's 500 kilometers away from the nearest land with people on it, 2,000 kilometers away from any other continent, basically smack bang in the middle of the South Pacific. You can't get there by any way except a boat. There's no planes, there's no helicopters. So it takes about 5 days from London to get there. So when I found this out, you can imagine I was feeling a little bit daunted at the prospect. Also because the boat that comes there only comes every 3 months. If you're not on it when it leaves, you're staying there for 3 months. So, feeling a bit daunted. But it turned out that I was going as part of a team of three. I thought, okay, I'm going to go with some colleagues. It won't just be me. And I just point out that not only is it incredibly remote, it's also got one of the world's smallest communities of about 35 people. So small in every sense of the word. But anyway, I thought, great, I'll get to go with some colleagues. You know, I'll have some familiar faces there. Except... after I pretty much committed to going on the project, they said, oh, and by the way, we're leaving after 3 weeks. I'm sorry. And it turned out that they were going to have to go after 3 weeks because that's when the last rotation of the boat leaves, and then I would stay for another 73 days with just me and this community of 30 people who I had never met and obviously didn't know me in any possible sense. And at that point, you know, I really wanted to back out. I was vaguely terrified of, you know, going, being by myself in this utterly strange place that I'd never heard of for such a long time. And it's strange looking back now and thinking how close I came to actually saying, look, I don't think I can do this. But I basically already committed. So despite what I hadn't been told, a few months later, I found myself being sailing up to the shore of this island in the island launch, the only boat that they had, and setting foot onto this place that a few months ago, didn't even know existed, and now here I was, it was going to be my home, where I'd have to get to know the people and for 3 months, you know, do some research and also, you know, make a life for myself. So from a historical point of view, it's also really interesting, because anyone familiar with the Bounty Mutiny, HMS Bounty? It's a famous story about a group of British sailors who mutinied on their boat in about 1790, and Pitcairn is where they went. And 220 years later, their descendants still live there. Unbelievably. And when I got there, I was told that the house I'd be living in was built on exactly the same site where the lead mutineer, Fletcher Christian, where he made his house. So not only was it an incredibly alien place from the isolation side, also this amazing history that to be utterly immersed in by staying there and living on the site of this, you know, where this famous historical person lived. So you're probably wondering at this point, so why was I going to this faraway island at great length and difficulty? Essentially, to briefly explain, the Pitcairn marine ecosystems are considered very poorly studied and potentially of great value because of their biological uniqueness. You know, if it's very isolated, you get unique species, unique ecosystems, and no one's really done much work there before. So we took a bunch of underwater cameras, which we baited, and then we would basically deploy them in the sea and try and sample the marine life, something which had never been done before using this technique on Pitcairn. So hoping to find out some new things and maybe find some new species. So the first 3 weeks went past. We did some initial work. I got to know a few people, but I still didn't really feel at home. And then it came to the moment when my colleagues were saying, cheerio, good luck. And as I watched the boat sail away, I was sort of thinking, oh my God, you know, that's it. You know, and I really was quite literally marooned. And in this day and age, and living in parts of the world such as, well, most parts of the world, it's so connected, everything is so accessible. But there was no way off. Like for 72 days, this was where I was going to be. And all you can see is ocean in every direction. You know that there's nobody even going to go past unless by some complete chance. So, and that was really quite overwhelming. It was the kind of isolation that living in somewhere like London, you can't experience anything even close. And I was daunted at the prospect of three months. But then here are people who spend their entire lives, and that is their life. And the people there in fairly advanced years who've never left. And again, it's such a modern, connected world. What an extraordinary life that is for people to lead. So I should point out before you think that 3 months on a tropical island sounds incredibly glamorous. I mean, it was very nice in many ways. Don't get me wrong. But I also had to write my entire research project while I was there. So for the last 6 months on this tropical island, I had more of a tropical desk where I didn't really get to do anything. So I look outside and think, oh, look at the palm trees and the blue sea. Occasionally a humpback whale would jump. No, seriously, there's whales jumping around. And I think, oh, well, I better get back to this spreadsheet. So, yeah, the last 6 weeks was very surreal. Working 10 hours a day, often not seeing anybody, because they're a very small community, all with very busy lives in this own little island. So I'd go for hours or days without seeing anybody. So that was quite definitely a unique way to write a project, and hopefully to go for my university's most remote essay submission, if that was a thing, which it's not. But I think I'd probably win if it was. So being field research, things went wrong. Of course they do. Anyone who's ever done research, whether in a lab, in the field, anywhere, knows stuff goes wrong. But on somewhere like Pitcairn, everything is amplified, because if anything breaks, you can't, I mean, Amazon don't deliver to Pitcairn yet. Give them a few years. But you can't get anything there. You've got to fix it or you've got to make do. And so we had some bad weather, which we kind of expected. You know, the legendary Pitcairn storms, and we had remnants of hurricanes blowing in. I look out at the sea day after day and say to my local supporters and field assistants, can we go out and do some camera deployments today? And they just look at me and laugh and say, no chance, because it's a totally exposed place. The sea is huge. So we had bad weather. And then we had another thing which I kind of expected, which is that at some point I did forget to turn the cameras on. So I'd throw the camera in, bring it up an hour later. Whoops. I told myself I wouldn't do it, but of course I did it anyway. So again, kind of expected that. And then less expected, had one particular camera deployment where an octopus managed to partially break part of the equipment, which then fell off. So less expected. So in essence, lots of things went wrong, which in various ways we dealt with, and we got lots of data. But we had something rather more serious go wrong, which kind of brought home the isolation to me, and also the isolation of living there, which is one of my field assistants became very ill while we were there. And basically, there is a doctor on the island, the guy at the time used to work in the Antarctic, so he knows what he's talking about. So if you have anything relatively minor, it can be dealt with. But if anything major goes wrong, you've got to get off. But it's too far for, say, a helicopter evacuation, so you just have to make do. And so this man was very sick, and too sick for the doctor. The doctor actually told me that he used to wind me up and say, have you had your appendix out? And I said, nope. He said, oh, that was silly, foolish. Come here with an appendix. And he said, oh, it's fine. He said, if your appendix is still there and you get appendicitis, I'll cut it out under a local anesthetic, which was, I don't think he was joking either. So every time I got a stomach pain, I just think, really? Now? Is it going to happen now? It didn't, thankfully, but my colleague, who was an islander himself, did become very ill, and they decided that they had to get him off in a matter of days, or he would die. And the only way to do it is for the islanders to do it themselves. So bear in mind a population of 35. So the boat, crewed by about 6-7 people, took him in the island's only boat, which is about a 20-foot, maybe 30-foot, open-top longboat. So really not an ocean-going vessel. And they took it, and they took this man, and they sailed him for 500 kilometers across the open ocean for 2.5 days to get him to the nearest runway, where a plane could actually pick him up. And he survived, which is a nice ending to the story. But the consequences were unthinkable. And should their boat break down, nobody else is coming for them. And for me, it felt very useless watching this and admiring, I suppose, of the bravery of the act of taking this man away. And it made me think, because I was there doing, doing science. It was only a temporary thing, albeit for 3 months, but it was still. And I was seeing this event and thinking how life on this island comes in so many of the comforts we take for granted taken away. And watching this happen to this guy, I applied it to myself. What if I become ill? What if it happens to me? And thankfully it didn't, and it all had a happy ending. But it was an extraordinary thing to witness, and a situation that I don't think I could have seen anywhere else. Anyway, the time flew by, and before I knew it, I'd been there for 93 days, grown a pretty impressive castaway-type beard, which I haven't kept, sadly. And it was time to go. And so before I knew it, I was on the way back and getting to the airport and thinking that there's more people in this plane than I've seen in 3 months, twice as many, maybe three times even. And then looking back on it now, it's all quite surreal. I have to remind myself that I spent such a long time in such a place which is so otherworldly in so many ways. And all because I decided to reply to an advert and take a project at the time without really thinking through what was involved. But, maybe I would have not applied if I'd known. Maybe I'd have been too scared. So maybe thinking too much would not have been a good idea in that particular situation. So, yeah, it's a nice story about my pursuit of science ended up taking me to the end of the world, somewhere I never even heard of. So thank you very much.
That was Henry Duffy. Henry is a conservationist with a particular interest in the marine environment and a background in tropical marine ecology and fisheries management. He's been marooned on one of the world's most remote islands for 3 months in the name of scientific research and aims to convince everyone that corals, sharks, sponges, and fish are just as exciting as all the wildlife on land. The Story Collider is produced by me, Brian Wecht, Aaron Barker, Ari Daniel, Christine Gentry, Skylar Bear, Shane Hanlon, Rosie Waldron, and Liz Neely. The podcast is produced by Rose Eveleth. Additional help from Brooke Williams, Lena Groger, and Justin D'Ambrosio. The theme music is by Ghost. Special thanks to the Hackney Round Chapel for hosting the show, to the British Science Association for being amazing partners, and to all the Duffies out there. This is the third story we've run in as many months by a Duffy, and as near as we can tell, they're all unrelated. So, thanks, Duffies. Thanks for listening.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.